Welcome in, Kia ora, to another episode of the Podfathers, a Slam Diego Padres podcast. Coming to you live from the Podfather studio. Believe it or not, it is done. Not really. It's pretty unorganized right now, but I'm up here. A little bit different. We haven't been on for the last month and a half. So apologies about that up front. Been quite busy. And with that being said, Los and Walls are not on the call. Actually, it's Walls and guest star Matt, family friend, been buds for a while. So good to have a new member on the episode tonight. Los has been crazy busy, so Matt's filling in. So without further ado, how you doing, bro?
I'm doing great. If you asked me like 3 days ago, it'd be a different answer. But today I'm doing great. Coming off of two wins.
Yeah, I know. The two wins in a row has seemed like that hasn't happened in about 3 or 4 months. It obviously hasn't been that long. But cool to see them actually do good for once. Yeah. So
it does feel like it's been 4 months, though. It feels like it's been a long time.
Yeah.
Losing.
No, I know. And like I think if we really put it into context, 4 months ago is when we were actually doing like really well. So it's not that feasible that 4 months really was that long ago. Yeah. Believe it or not, we actually used to be a really, really good team. But with that being said, we're only, I think, a game out, maybe game and a half behind the Cardinals. Still in it. We're going to stay positive the best that we can on this episode. Definitely going to be some venting. With all this pent up aggression from the last month or so. As usual, you know, we're going to try to keep it pretty positive. So just to run into things right now, give you a little update. Team record, 75-70, a lot worse than the last time we recorded here. Still about 500. Really digging deep for this positivity here. That is good for third in the NL West, 19 and a half games back with a plus 51 RDIF run differential. As for your individual hitting leaders, been a little tough going as of late. This is as of 2 days ago, mind you, as well. So we're recording here on Thursday night. I don't even know what day of the week it is. So this is before the two-game winning streak, this massive winning streak that we've been on. Stats are through the 14th after we just lost the first two games to the Giants, FYI. So just want to prefix that. Tatis is leading the way with 38 home runs. I think it's 39 now. From today, Manny, 91 RBIs for the team lead, stolen bases, Fernando with 25 runs, Fernando with 93 hits, Frazier combined, obviously, with Pittsburgh and San Diego with 159. I feel like that had been stuck there for quite a while, not including these last two games. I'm pretty sure he has like 6 or 7 hits these last two games. So let's see if we can get the Pittsburgh Frazier going here for the last 20 games or so. Average 305, Adam Frazier. OPS, Fernando at 996, and Frazier with a 370 OBP. I'm pretty sure Fernando had a 369 OBP too. So he was just under Adam right there. So good to see him getting that OBP up. But you want to take the individual pitching leaders?
Yeah, one thing I want to hit on, though, is seeing Frazier actually getting hits now, which is basically, you know, what he does best is get hits, and that's what he's actually doing now. So it's, I think he's been, in my opinion, one of the big catalysts of the offense the past two games.
Yeah, no, I mean, so. Kevin Acey, I don't love. That's kind of me to come in with that. He causes a lot of controversy with the way he words things typically, right? Because he tries to get really smart and intelligent with the way he words it, and it comes off kind of snarky, to put it that way. He actually made a good point in saying that when Frazier's on, he's so fun to watch because it looks like he's playing tennis with a baseball. And I thought that was a really like elegant way to phrase that, because it does look like that. He doesn't swing that hard. He's in the bottom 10% of exit velo, just like super old school style of playing, kind of Tony Gwynn-esque in a sense, for his approach. And you can see that, like, when he's able to just direct the balls like a tennis match, then that's when he's on point. And little background info too, Matt is a little bit of a Pittsburgh Pirates fan, and it's because his dad's a Steelers fan, Pirates fan, was from that area as well. So I'm sure you can give us a pretty good amount of insight of Frazier here in this episode.
Yeah, very familiar with the Pirates. definitely home team, the Padres, but am familiar with the Pirates. So, yeah, Adam Frazier is not a guy who's going to kill you like Tatis, but honestly, Frazier should be hitting at the top of the lineup against right-handers. So seeing him actually start to get going is going to be great for Tatis as well.
Yeah, and I guess to like kind of just keep that point going, do you think that, I mean, obviously losing Crone the last few days with that little fracture in the finger that he got, do you think Frazier, knowing he's going to be playing second base and hitting kind of, I mean, he wasn't at the top of the lineup, but just having that consistency and knowing that he's going to be, you know, in the lineup playing second, kind of hitting more towards the top of the lineup, do you think that's helping him settle in these last couple games, or is it kind of just coincidental?
I mean, he could. I think, especially being traded from back east to San Diego, ooh, I feel like that's a big change for a ball player, and that can be, you know, that can affect someone psychologically, just not being in a familiar place and mm-hmm. not playing a familiar position if he's playing left or, you know, wherever he's going to be playing and kind of playing all over the place, not his usual second base every game, can throw him off. So I think having some sort of familiarity can help, and hopefully it can help moving forward too.
Yeah. And like you can see how dangerous he is with the pine, like when he is on fire, because him and Tatis yesterday, I think they're 6-for-8 or whatever it was. I mean, if you can get that every day, obviously that'd be pretty amazing. That's not going to happen. If you could get a third of that every night on a consistent basis, which Frazier did for Pittsburgh all year long, that's why they went out and got him. Like you said, he could be a catalyst for this team going forward. So hopefully.
Yeah. I think that's another, I think, controversy is the way Tingler's been managing the lineups too. Mm-hmm. And, you know, against right-handers is kind of where the Padres struggle. And so getting Frazier towards the top of the lineup, if he's hot, you know, that'll help a lot.
Yeah, definitely. Like, we just need anybody on base right now. Yeah. Like, anyone.
Just get someone in front of Tatis.
Yeah, that's literally all you need. That's all you need.
Someone on base.
I'm loving the Tatis Machado consistency too, of that protection, because if you're going to pitch around Bebo, then you got to go right to Manny. So hopefully we can get that. And yeah, just get a little bit more consistency too. I'll later in the episode, I have a couple other things too about the lineup change and whatnot. Craig Elson on Twitter actually had a really good point of the amount of lineups that have been being used. So we'll circle back to that in a little bit. But one thing that hasn't been that great, it's been better. Some guys have been marginally better, Blake Snell included in this list, is the pitching, kind of a little bit up and down. Bullpen starting pitching's been up and down. We'll get into those that have done well in the last 30 days that haven't done well in the last 30 days as well. But you want to take over the individual pitching leaders?
The individual pitching leaders for ERA is Musgrove at a 2.99 ERA, four strikeouts. Musgrove again at 184. Saves, we got Melanson, 37 saves out of 42 chances there. And whip, you guessed it, Musgrove at a 1.04 whip.
So I guess the one thing that was very consistent at the beginning of the year was Darvish Musgrove was up there. It was when we throw out the agenda, we'd look up the stats and be like, oh, Darvish is leading the squad in strikeouts and whip and ERA. And then the next week, sometimes there'd literally be a tie where Musgrove and Darvish would have the exact same strikeouts at this point in the year. And clearly you can see who's emerged as the clear number one for this team. One side of it, great to see Musgrove doing what he's doing and being absolutely dominant when he was a projected number four starter for us this year. Had him at number five going into the season. On the flip side, Darvish has been extremely underwhelming. I don't know exactly what it is. I would like to assume it is not the sticky substance ban, although I don't know what your take is on that. It seems like he's kind of fallen off the face of the earth ever since then. I know he's been battling injuries. He's had a back issue, hip issue, that sort of stuff. That's never a fun thing to go through mid-season and try to recover. But I don't, do you have any clue as to what is going on with you? Cause he is just, like I said, just fallen off the face of the earth.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's tough with you, but I think if you look at kind of his peripheral numbers, it seems like he's been getting unlucky. Like his ERA has been like a 4.8 something, but his expected ERA is like one whole run less than that. So it seems like he's been getting unlucky with, you know, balls in play and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it could be it, and he could turn it on again, but he's not looking great right now. One thing that's been fantastic with Musgrove is his consistency. He's always flashed the ability to shut a team down for seven innings, you know, with the Pirates. But then the next game, he would give up five or six runs, you know, in two innings. So, and he would sport like maybe a 4 or 5 ERA. But now he's, it's been amazing what he's been able to do with the Padres. He's been consistent. He has been the ace of the rotation. He's kind of been the backbone.
Yeah. And I think from, I mean, you know, more than I do with Musgrove, just with his Pirates connection, but it seems as if they're extending him a lot more in games than Pittsburgh did as well. Like I'm pretty sure that I don't believe it was his career best. It might've been, but at least for last year, like his highest pitch count he had in the game was like 94. And I could be completely butchering that, but early on in the season, I think he passed in like his second start or third start. It was against the Dodgers. And, same thing with Blake Snell. That was their intention going into the year, was to try to elongate these starters, you know, starts. Didn't work out too well. A lot of the time we were leaning on the bullpen really early. They were trying to ease in the starters. You could tell there was a plan in place that wasn't necessarily working too well. I mean, it would work at times, but I think just him knowing that he can go out there and pitch, you know, 6-7 innings with kind of no cap, might be helping. It could just be he's getting that extra boost because it's his hometown team that he's playing for. You know, I think he's just comfortable. His family's here. He's got a damn cafe here that his family has that he can just walk to in the morning to go support and then drive to work, you know? So, I think that that's definitely part of it, but we definitely, to me, offseason acquisition of the year, which I was excited, very excited when he came over, he's exceeded my expectations by quite a long shot. And like you said, that consistency has been super key.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, when the Padres acquired him, I knew that he had potential, but then, you know, in the back of your mind, it's like, he has potential, and then he kind of, you know, craps the bed a little bit.
Yeah.
Every other start, it seemed like. But, yeah, he's locked in. And, you know, he's got something going. And whether it's a San Diego, you know, roots just helping him or whatnot, it's looking pretty good.
Yeah, he just the mentality that he has too, where, you know, a couple weeks ago, I think it was Dennis Lynn where he released, it might've been even AJ Castle, one of the two beat writers. They released the conversation that Musgrove had with Tingler and the coaching staff. And he was like, give me the ball every fifth day. Like, I don't care if it's Blake's start. I don't care if it's a day off, you know, like if you need to shorten the rotation, I'm pitching the best I have in my career consistently. Give me the ball every 5 days. And that's what you want to see. And that is what an ace does. You know, give me the ball every fifth day. I will get a dub for this squad or put us in the best position to do that. And so to see him really assume that role, especially with the amount of guys, I mean, Blake Snell's been pitching amazing other than him, unfortunately going on the IL, which we'll get into as well. Musgrove has been that consistent factor pretty much all year. Now he had a down kind of like middle of May to mid June, was definitely his rough patch, but overall, I mean, you guys are going to have that 162 game season. You're going to have that to see him have that consistency. And then now the mentality as well, I think that he's just assuming that role and just he's rolling with it. So that's been really, really cool to see. What hasn't been that good at all is, again, so 2 days ago is when we compiled all these stats. They were the Padres as a whole, 9-20 in their last 29 games. That is good for dead last in the National League. Definitely not something you're trying to do if you're wanting to preserve a playoff spot with that. So Musgrove, definitely the bright spot. Padres going 9-20 in their last 29. Now they're 11-20. So you can't even really call that a little bit more respectable. You just got to really, really ride the 2-game win streak and just hope they can carry over that success. But
yeah, that's the big story, isn't it? Mm-hmm. How, you know, some say collapse of the team, but it feels like a collapse mostly, I think, in my opinion, because the team and the players, they look dejected. The past 2 days have been different, but before that, they just looked like there was something wrong. Like they, like someone had given up on the team, and then it just kind of snowballed from there. One thing I think Musgrove has that is important is intensity. He's intense when he has the ball, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, all pitchers are, but he's got something going. And another guy that's had success with the Padres who has that intensity also is Melanson. That dude,
yes.
Melanson's a psycho. And, I think that's something that the team, I think, needs. It's more intensity. You know, it's not – it just feels like the team is feeling sorry for themselves.
Yeah, I completely agree. I completely agree. The flatness in the last, really since the All-Star break, and especially since the trade deadline, has been alarming to say the least. This team, like, we have a swag chain. This team is built off of that, where they're here for the flash and the fun. And that originates with Fernando. And when Fernando went down again with his shoulder and came back and wasn't playing shortstop, I think that was a huge factor in kind of the bubble popping for this team. Like earlier in the year, were they getting lucky in certain games? Absolutely. There were some games where they had no business in winning, but the intensity was there. Like you said, they just grinded out some of these games where we were losing 5-2, 6-2, 4-1, whatever the case it was, they were coming back because of that intensity and that joy, really, that they were playing. They were stoked. They were having such a blast. And I feel like ever since, one, the big blow from the trade deadline news of Scherzer and Turner going, that didn't help. And number two, Bebo coming back and having to get stuck in the outfield. He is the heart and soul of this team. So if Fernando is not feeling good, the team is not feeling good. With that being said, does that not go on Tingler's shoulders to fix that situation?
Yeah, that's interesting. I like what you said. Fernando is the heart and soul of the team. And if you like, he's the shortstop, it's kind of like it's a very meaningful position to play for a baseball team. And it's almost his identity too, his entire career. And you take that away and it looks like he's not having fun. And then the entire team's not having fun. Yeah, Tingler's got to step in and do something. I mean, I'm not sure. It's still kind of unclear as to why they made that change, because you put Fernando in a position where he doesn't play every day. Obviously, there's going to be risk for injury just because he doesn't play that position every day. Yeah. He played pretty well in the position, I'd say, but I don't.
Yeah, considering the circumstances, for sure.
Yeah, I don't see that as a big change in injury risk, because he doesn't play in the outfield. But now that he's back at shortstop, it seems like there's a shift and the shift in mentality, which could be huge. It sounds like, sounds like nothing. It sounds like mentality, whatever, kind of comes with winning. It goes with losing. But I think it does play a big part.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. And Yeah, you suck the fun out of Tatis, and this team's not having fun. And like you said, the mentality with winning goes a long ways. Like, so does having fun. Like, if you're losing, it sucks. Like that, and maybe that, I mean, you've seen it. That's a weakness of this team for sure. If things aren't going well, it goes really not well. It goes really bad. And to me, you're going to want to have a little bit more, a little bit of a different approach. I would have liked to see a little bit of a different approach where get tossed from a game. You know what I mean? From in Tingler's perspective, get someone, not even just Tingler too. I know it's Tingler's the guy to steer the ship. So the responsibility does come down to him. I want to see the players get more pissed off, even at each other. Like a lot of times people will say, you know, if you're fighting amongst yourselves, then you've lost. You've officially lost because you're not a team. And in certain sports, because of the time horizon, that could be true. If you're fighting with a guy in May, there's a good chance that you can ride it by July and you have two more months to make that up. So I just wanted to see a little bit of intensity. Like you said before, it was so flat that it was just like sickening to watch, to where just show some heart, some life. And with the whole it moving Tatis to the outfield, I have a little bit of a conspiracy theory about it. But first, you sign the guy to a 14-year, $340 million contract as a shortstop for the San Diego Padres. You don't sign him as an outfielder. I guarantee you damn well they didn't say, you're going to be a whatever we want you to be with this contract. It was, he's going in there saying, no, I'm playing for 14 years as shortstop for San Diego. Playing outfield, you made a great point. He doesn't know how to play that position. Injury risk right away. I mean, you put anyone in a foreign area of any profession, and if they're not comfortable doing that job, something bad can happen, whether that's, you know, physically, mentally, whatever the case is. And so, yeah, I thought he did a really, really good job considering the circumstances. My conspiracy theory, which I might have brought this up before, but because of the shoulder popping out, which he actually did not hurt. He did hurt it once sliding, but it never forced him out of the game longer, or forced him onto the IL. The two times he did it was one sliding in the third, two swinging about. That doesn't happen at the shortstop position. It didn't happen at the shortstop position. So to me, it seemed like a very, very convenient time to try to get Fernando a little bit of experience in the outfield for this BS excuse that he's not going to get hurt out there, because CJ Abrams is coming through the system and is a better consistent defensive shortstop than Fernando Tatis Jr. is. Keep that core with him and Crone at second base. Then all of a sudden you have a perennial all-star and MVP candidate in the outfield in Fernando. And I think that kind of was AJ's plan a little bit, to where he was looking for an excuse to get him some experience out in the outfield. I could be way off, but I just had a sneaky suspicion that they were trying to do that from the get-go. Because even in preseason and spring training, there was rumors and mumbling about him potentially taking reps in center. So I have a feeling like that stuff doesn't come out just randomly. Like there's definitely some validity to that, to me at least. So I don't know if you think that I'm like way off there, or if that is like maybe a case in point to a little degree.
Yeah, I had the same thought, because they were trying Abrams in center and they were trying him in the outfield. It sounded like it didn't go too well, but we don't have, you know, all the information on that. But yeah, like you said, Abrams is knocking on the door. Like, he's going to be up next year. And yeah. I think, you know, to be honest, I think that's where we all, you know, after the trade, deadline is kind of when the team went downhill, when, you know, the controversy of potentially trading Hosmer and that didn't go through. And then, like you said, the Scherzer deal was announced to the Padres and then went to the Dodgers. Kind of was like the balloon deflating. Mm-hmm. It seemed like potentially Preller is planning for next year and not this year. And maybe that's, you know, maybe there was a controversy in mm-hmm. the organization with that and kind of stemmed from there. But yeah, it's definitely not a – moving Fernando to the outfield is not a let's win this year move.
No.
That's saying what they have for next year. So I think that you might be spot on with that.
Well, thank you. Well, I guess we'll see. I think that has kind of hindered. That's been the one thing about AJ too, is he's so forward thinking that is such a strength. But at the same time, if you're only forward thinking, you can't not be forward thinking and win now. Like sometimes you do have to sacrifice a couple guys to get a Scherzer, to get a Trey Turner, and then all of a sudden your team changes. The Dodgers were stuck in the mud, really. Like I know that they had a good record, they're neck and neck with the Padres, but you can see from there, it's not the only reason, but they have excelled tremendously and met expectations that were at the beginning of the season, whereas we have gone the complete opposite direction. So I think as AJ gets a little bit more mature with that and tries to ditch the scout hat, because that's what he is. He's a scout from time to time. Hopefully that works, because I do think that his leash is getting a little bit shorter here, especially with the minor league development. Definitely a topic probably for the offseason, so I won't go into that. But we'll see. Hopefully we can just get a string of wins here and forget all that ever happened if they get into the playoffs and there and beyond. So
it's the team's almost forgetting that they're in contention for the wild card spot.
No, we're right there.
Yeah, it's kind of where the Giants have done such a great job that it's kind of like we're in the spot that even if we had won 10 more games, we'd be in the same exact spot.
Yeah.
You got to go and win that second wild card spot and win that wild card game, which is, yeah, exactly. Got to go out and get it.
Yeah. And like, again, we've debated not really debated, just brought up and both felt the same way about how stupid a one game wild card is anyways, but I won't get into that too much right now, but before our massive two game win streak, just to throw a little, just keep the recap going from the last month, since we hadn't had that episode drop for a good 4 or 5 weeks now. Quick little update. In the last 30 days, the leader of the Padres in batting average was Manny Machado. Great, right? That sounds awesome. Like it should be Manny or Bebo, probably Frazier. He had a .239 average the last 30 days to lead the team. That is how atrocious our offense has been. The leader in this guy cracks me up every time that he's doing something decent, which isn't even good, but he's leading the pack. Eric Hosmer led the team with a .341 on base percentage in the last 30 days. Eric Hosmer.
Hosmer.
As atrocious as he's been playing in the last, really this season, but the last month, he is your team leader in OBP in the last 30 days. So take that what you will.
Yeah, it's not great. I mean, I think that those are perfect stats to kind of sum up what's happened with the offense. A .239 average is what's leading the team in the past 30 days.
That's not good, but if you're middle of the pack for the last 30 days, so.
Right. Yeah, I mean, in Hosmer, he can get on base, but his main issue that it's always been is he doesn't slug. He's not a slugger.
No.
And
yeah.
So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see who was slugging the most. I'm assuming it was Tatis. But
I believe it was – I don't have that on here, but I'm pretty sure it was Will Myers, actually. If Myers. I'm not mistaken. Yes. Okay. Who has also been taking a lot of stick because he hasn't been living up to what he should be doing. And that is very true. That's not an invalid point, but he's leading the team. No one is. No one was in the last 30 days is my point. So, if I'm not mistaken, it was Will. And then, I think Tatis was right there behind him. And clearly if Fernando, I don't know if Fernando's ever gone 30 days in he probably didn't. I'm pretty sure that he wasn't a part of those full 30 days because he came off the IL probably like 20 days before that. Sure. But even so, like to have, say for example, 20 days that it's been, Fernando not hitting 239 is extremely unlike him. And so that's why this stat I thought was just kind of a perfect summation of how these last 30 days go. If you read Manny Machado is leading the squad in batting average, you're like, heck yeah. And then you see the average and you're like, oh God, this is why we've been so bad.
But 239.
239. That's not good at all. As for the pitching, in the last 30 days, Yu Darvish, his ERA was 8.68. So our ace is no longer an ace as of right now. He is struggling mightily. On the flip side, the savior of the Padres this year, Nabil Crismat, leading the squad with a 0.77 ERA over 8 games. He also threw, I think it was 4 scoreless tonight, if I'm not mistaken. So he lowered that ERA in the last 30 days even more. And then just to give some credit to Snell here, he had a 0.44 whip, which is absolutely nasty, in the last 30 days with a 0.70 on base, a batting average against him, an opposing batting average against him. He had the 2 games where he flirted with a no hitter back to back. So that's going to help with that. But just to give some love to Snell there, because he didn't lead the squad in ERA in the last 30 days, that goes to show you how damn good and an integral part that Crismat has been, in just eating good, crappy innings, whatever he needs to do. He just gets outs. Yeah. And that's what he's been doing.
He operates under big deficits or big leads. That's when he does his work. Snell, I will say, if you've been watching, Snell has been ramping up the sliders and the fastballs.
Yeah.
He's been hammering fastballs and sliders against righties. And I think that's it. It's part of the reason why he's done so well. Mm-hmm. He's kind of taken the changeup out of the equation, and that's been good for him.
Yeah. No, and that to me is all to Ben Fritz, the interim pitching coach. You've seen that with the pitchers across the board, starters, bullpens, bullpen guys, whoever. They've been way more aggressive in the past, month or so since Larry Rothschild's been let go. And the one guy that is really, reaping the dividends from that is Blake Snell, for sure. Like you said, he had way too many walks. He was trying to be too cute all the time, throwing his curveball, throwing his changeup on, pitch 1-2. And he's attacking guys right now. And it's helping with the pitch count too. I mean, the fact that he, almost had a no hitter in 2 straight games, he goes to show you that, he's actually getting into the 6th, 7th, 8th with not 130 pitches. He did one game, but he's only given one hit. So he's definitely kind of reaping the benefits of that pitching coach change, for sure.
Yeah, I think exactly like you said, when Larry was fired, Snell popped. So it was the change in the way he was attacking right-handers, I think, watching games. He struggled against right-handers, and now he's dominating.
And unfortunately, because he was doing so well, and we are the Padres, or fans of them at least, Snell has just popped on the IL with a left abductor groin strain. Lasted 11 pitches in his outing against Dodgers here recently. So right when he was the ace of the last month. I know that we've said Musgrove has been throughout the entire course of the season. Blake Snell was arguably the best pitcher in baseball in the last 30 days. In his last 4 or 5 starts, he was probably top 3 in baseball. And we lost him to the IL. We also lost Chris Paddock, who, say what you will about the guy, I was at the game. Thank you, Kevin, for the tickets to that one again. When we were facing the Nationals, and it was maybe the worst starting pitching outing I've possibly ever seen, both with the bat and fielding and pitching. Like, he got pulled after he couldn't field a sacrifice bunt by the pitcher that night. it was atrocious. But all credit to him, he came back after that and was exactly what we needed for starting pitching depth. Was pitching fantastic, really, for coming off the IL. And then we lost him to the IL again, this time with right elbow inflammation. So I think they're being cautious with him. You never like to see that at all. But
yeah, hopefully it is scary. I mean, anytime you see the elbow inflammation, that's for sure.
Yeah, so I don't have any update on if he's going to be back this year, nor was Snell.
From what I saw, they were optimistic about Snell just missing one start and then being back for San Francisco again. And I think they were being optimistic about Paddock as well, the team, hoping he could be back for San Francisco too.
Sweet.
But I think Paddock is more – it seems a little bit more serious.
Yeah. No, see, this is why I brought you on the pod. You got all the transaction news. This is exactly why Matt's on here tonight. Paddock scares me a little. I wouldn't be surprised if they shut him down just because he's been on the IL a few times already this year too. Snell, on the other hand, is different injury. I know, like, don't get me wrong, like left abductor groin strain sounds horrible. That's not as long-term, obviously, as an elbow. So I wouldn't be surprised if they do try to at least rush him back because he's been so effective. But
and it's not uncommon. He's been dealing with that.
Yeah.
All season, that groin.
Yeah, he has. Yeah. So hopefully he can just manage that in the last, you know, month of the season, month and a half.
Gosh, I'm being one thing to touch on, Cronenworth as well. I think he's considered day-to-day.
Yes.
Right now. And from what I was seeing, what the team was putting out is it's they're managing the inflammation. If the inflammation is gone, it's down to pain tolerance. So
for a fracture.
For a fracture of your finger, yeah.
Gripping a bat, throwing a baseball, sounds just like pain tolerance. But yeah.
So they were optimistic about his return as well.
This weekend, right?
Yeah, that's what they were thinking against St. Louis.
Yeah, so I mean that would be if he can play first base or at least platoon at first. And I don't know, like, I don't know. I want to see Fernando at short every day personally, but if you want to put Crone in that, you know, platoon role and he plays a little bit of short, a little bit of first. And then, so then Tatis is going right field and short. I guess I'm okay with that just because we're sprinkling in shortstop a little bit more. And at the same time, getting, you know, Hosmer in and out of the lineup a little bit more. But I guess we'll see. We'll see where that goes. I guess we'll see maybe as early as tomorrow and against the Cardinals here. But in the corresponding – oh, yeah, sorry. Go for it.
Sorry. I was going to say Hosmer's been hitting recently, but I don't know how much more I can watch – his fielding at first. Good Lord.
I think
you saw that one play where it was Musgrove. A bang bang play at first.
Yep.
Right? And no, it's a throw from Cronenworth.
Oh yes, and, God, yeah.
Yeah. And he's like trying to play the hop, but it's a bang bang play. You gotta, you know, reach out,
stretch.
Pick. Yeah. And he like takes a step back. It's like, what are you doing, man?
Yeah. That's been it's been tough defensively. It's been really, really tough. He has 4 gold gloves. So to see that regression, you don't typically see a defensive regression like that. Hitting wise. Yeah. I mean, you know, power, as you get older, you lose some power. You have to have a different approach, all that sort of stuff. But defensively, that's where it's been so disappointing because really from day one, he hasn't been meeting. I mean, he clearly hasn't met those gold glove, you know, gold gloves that he's won in the past. He hasn't been meeting those expectations. But just to see how consistently bad that he has been playing defensively is the most, to me, it's the most disappointing part too, because for a team that's not hitting, and has inconsistent pitching, the least that you can do as a squad to put yourself in the best position to win a game, a ball game, is to just play kick-ass defense. today we saw that Profar in right field, not your natural right fielder at, mind you, at Oracle Park, AT&T Park, playing it off the wall from Brandon Belt, almost hitting a home run, but he was about a foot away, holds him to a single. Next at bat, Longoria, double play. Yep. Next inning, Crawford trying to stretch the double, fam, throws him out at second. Like, that wins baseball games. And you can, that's effort right there and concentration. That's not necessarily, you know, just hitting the ball right to a guy or whatever. That, like, you can teach that and you can have maintain that effort. So to see them playing good baseball now or good defense now, shocking that it's contributing to the couple wins that they've had. But circle back to Hosmer's defense, that to me is why it's been the most disappointing, because you know that that is there in his game, in his locker. It just, it hasn't been there. And you know, I saw Nick on Twitter. He said that maybe Haas has some sort of injury that he's just grinding through, because there's no other reason to me as to why he never stretches for a ball. And he used to all the time. So I don't know if he has some sort of groin issue, and whatever the case may be, and he's just out there trying to grind it out. That to give him, I mean, he might not, he might just be playing really bad defensively, but I can't think of any other reason as to why it's gone this sour.
I hope he's got some kind of groin issue, because that's the only explanation.
Yeah.
He's been playing first base his entire career. And like you said, he's got four gold gloves. He's never really been a fantastic, at least according to, like, you know, the sabermetric stats and stuff like that. He's never been fantastic defensively according to those metrics.
But yeah.
He does have four gold gloves. He knows, he should know how to play first.
Yeah.
What we're seeing is not
four gold gloves.
Play first base. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
so it'd be nice to have Cronenworth there.
Yeah.
I think, in my opinion,
he played a lot there in at Michigan, you know, so it's not like it's a completely foreign position. Profar's done a great job at first. That dude, Swiss Army knife, man. Curacao Army knife, what we called him earlier in the year.
Yeah.
He plays everywhere. And when he's on fire, he is a sneaky guy that is a small heart and soul to this team. Like, when he came back from the IL, that's when the team started getting their mojo back a little bit. And that wasn't, you know, some coincidental thing. Profar is a huge part in that. He's got a big relationship with Manny and Fernando and a lot of the guys in the clubhouse. So having him set the tone at the front of the lineup the last two games has paid dividends. I don't know if it will every game, but good to see him kind of up there too. I know we're getting off on a little bit of a tangent there, but just want to give him a little bit of love, because he does deserve some credit for turning this around. But to get back on track and circle back to the injuries of the pitchers in particular, Snell going down and Paddock going down, we have made two corresponding moves, one being Ross Detweiler. He was formerly on the Marlins this year. He's been in the league since, 2007. Was on the Nationals for a really long time, kind of bounced around the last few years. Last season, he actually had the best season of his career, albeit with a 60-game season, so it was a shortened season. He ended up with a 3.2 ERA in 16 games, so very small sample size, really. Not that big, but still best quote-unquote season of his career. They counted it last year, apparently, so I guess we're going to count it for his stats. He held opponents to a .253 batting average, and he finished the year with a 1.22 whip. This year, in 41 appearances with the Marlins, he had a .496 ERA, a .230 opponents batting average, and a .127 whip. So lower batting average against, which is a positive. You're sometimes going to get ERA plus would have been a good one to include on here. I was just going off of basic metrics. So we kind of get a little bit of a clearer picture of, you know, was last year a little bit overstated in how well he was doing with the basic numbers and stuff like that. But regardless, not the worst numbers in the world. I know, you know, just the barely sub five ERA is not good. But .230 on base, you know, or opponent batting average, not too shabby. .127 whip is decently respectable for a, you know, a bullpen piece. And just looking at his saber metrics, his baseball savant stuff here, hard hit percentage, XBA, his strikeouts, X slugging, average exit velo is all in the top 25 percentile. where he really struggles is barrels. He gets barreled up a lot, which, as you can see, 230 on base, or gosh, I keep going on base. I got to get that out of my head. Opponent's batting average in comparison with a 4.96 ERA. Clearly, he's given up a lot of home runs right there, is what that's telling me. He's in the bottom 9% for barrels. Fastball velocity is in the bottom 9%. Curve spins in the bottom 7%. So doesn't look like he's a fast thrower. So when he is not locating, he is getting walloped, is basically what this is telling me. But I haven't watched too much film on him per se, not too many Marlins games on the calendar this year for me. So haven't seen a lot of him firsthand, but how you liking those advanced metrics right there for Ross, yeah, big Ross.
He's definitely a command guy. Obviously doesn't have too much stuff, you know, fastball velocity, bottom 9%. His K percent is the top 80% according to Baseball Savant. So, you know, that's phenomenal. I will say he may not have a great season going, but his last like few appearances for the Marlins went scoreless. So he may have a little bit of an adjustment that he figured out. Maybe he can help the bullpen.
Yeah. He could be kind of like a poor man's Drew Pomeranz, I feel like, maybe is what they're thinking. That might be kind of good. Gosh, I miss Drew. he has that veteran leadership for what that's worth. I know that hasn't been worth like a ton this year, but maybe it does pay some dividends. We'll see. Another guy that they signed was Vince Velasquez. So Vince Velasquez, he was on the Phillies pretty much his entire career. He started out as a first or second round draft pick with the Astros back in 2014. I could be wrong, but he's been around for quite a while. Career 31-41 record with a 4.88 ERA, a 1.39 WHIP, and 700 strikeouts and 638 innings pitched. So clearly a strikeout thrower. That's what's keeping him in the majors, is the fact that he can get Ks. Before I get into the advanced metrics, which are definitely not as good as Ross's, and that's not necessarily saying something because Ross does have some very good sectors that he's performing in. The one game that has haunted me, I guess haunted might be a little bit of a stretch, but I specifically remember the Padres in, I think it was 2016. I'd never heard of this guy, Vince Velasquez. I think he was like 23 at the time. He struck out 16 dudes on the Padres. I know we weren't very good. 16 strikeouts is impressive against any major league ball club. And so whenever I think of Vince Velasquez, I think of that outing of literally being a Cy Young type pitcher. So when I heard that he signed, I was like, oh, that's awesome. Like, that's what I remember. Like, he has this ability, obviously, to strike out guys. You go into the advanced metrics. There's a lot of blue on here. For those that haven't looked at Baseball Savant, blue is not good. Blue is bad. The one red that he has in 15 categories is fastball spin rate, and that's in the top 72 percentile. His next best is, and he's a strikeout thrower, his next best for this year specifically, we're just talking this year's advanced metrics, 50%. He's in the 50th percentile for strikeouts on the year. His X batting average is 53 percentile. But if we're dipping our toes really into these, his walks, not good, bottom 11 percentile. Average exit velo, bottom 17 percentile. Hard hit, bottom 23 percentile. Barrel percentage, exact same as Ross's, bottom 9 percentile. So you get my drift. It looks like a massive reach. There's not many options right now. So to get anyone with, you know, major league experience, especially from this year, is going to be tough with just free agents on the market. How are you feeling about the Vince Velasquez acquisition?
I think both Vince and Ross are pretty much reactions to the injuries that we had. I think I mean, we need anybody and everybody we can get to start these games and eat up innings. I view Vince as sort of a, you know, I know you said Ross is a poor man's Drew Pomeranz. I see Vince as like a poor man's Joe Musgrove. He flashes, you know, plus fastball, and he flashes the ability to strike guys out, but he has no command. He's like the opposite of Ross Detweiler, the other acquisition, where he has no command, but he has good stuff. So, I mean, if he can make an adjustment, then maybe he can help us out. And I think he's probably going to be mainly a bullpen guy, but maybe he starts for us in one of the series coming up just out of necessity.
I think he's starting tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken, against the Cardinals.
He is starting tomorrow.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure. So that will be very interesting.
Yeah.
Again, like for me, it was kind of like when we signed Jake Arrieta a few weeks ago. You just have this, you know, you hold on to something that you've read or seen or whatever. And like when Jake Arrieta was the 2016 Jake Arrieta, he was phenomenal. Clearly he's not that anymore, but part of you just yearns for him to show just glimpses of that. And to be fair, he hasn't pitched horribly. We've kind of gotten what we thought we would out of him, maybe even a little bit more. So hopefully Vince is the same way, to where he can eat, you know, at least three innings, so to where it's not just like a Pierce Johnson starter where he's going one inning. Maybe we can have Vince and the Bill used as like a normal starter and eat up six, seven innings. That would be fantastic. That might be too much to ask for, but at this point in time, you're out of options, like you said. So the one big, really giant issue to me that this is showcasing is the fact that there was nobody that they felt comfortable in double or triple A to be able to call up instead of signing these free agents. And so that's why it's so common at this time of year, is because you usually have like at least one guy, maybe two on the, especially the expanded rosters, that you can call up that's MLB kind of ready, to where, you know, they've been working on stuff all year. So to not see that happen, and for them to have to reach for these guys, and you know, like we're saying, they might be good, they might end up doing well for us. To me, the underlying issue is the fact that we didn't have anyone ready to come up for a start for Blake Snell, or, you know, for two starts for Chris Paddock. And I know that we've been absolutely ravaged with injuries, and the injury list is absolutely ridiculous. But with that being said, there's got to be at least a couple guys that you haven't heard of in AAA. And that's what the minor leagues are for, is for guys to perform and get called upon in situations like this. So I don't know if you feel the same about that.
Right. Well, I mean, you bring that up, and that kind of points right at Mackenzie Gore, you know, and where he's at in his development. And if Preller doesn't feel like it's beneficial to, I think, you know, with minor league players, you're looking at their development probably first before the team, I guess.
Success, you know, this for season, a game or two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you don't want to really ruin the development of Mackenzie Gore, where he could maybe help next year if he gets things right and gets things going so far this year. I know there's a couple guys that look promising maybe in double A, but yeah, there's, you know, you don't want him to make the jump when like the season is on the line, basically. I mean, playing St. Louis, we're a game back of St. Louis for that second wild card spot. These are meaningful games. At the same time, you're signing this guy who was just released by the Phillies. So
it's not like they'd release a really good player, I guess. Yeah. What they saw. So,
yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, maybe we can get something out of him. Hopefully, maybe he can do something for us. But like you said, it is concerning, you know, not having anybody in the wings in AAA, AA that we can bring up in spot starts like this.
Yeah, and I do a pretty loosely diligent job of checking my minor league at bat. I used to do that very frequently. So it's called First Pitch, the minor league at bat. as opposed to, you know, just at bat for major leagues, when you look at all the scores and how the Padres are doing, right, look at the game day, that sort of stuff. And I used to look at it a lot when the Padres were really bad, because it was like by May, I was paying attention to El Paso and Amarillo and San Antonio, even the freaking Portland Beavers way back in the day, because like we were so bad that by May it was like, what do we got, you know, in a year or two or three?
That was the hope.
Essentially. Yeah. That was the hope. And so I haven't been checking it as much really in the last 2 years, because the focus has been on the current squad, because we've been good, and taking a few peeks at it the last couple months there. When I say that there is no one ready to make that jump, there is no one ready. And stat like PCL and AAA, it's notoriously known for being a hitter's league and all that sort of stuff, so it's kind of, you know, inflated in that sense for pitchers, so it doesn't translate if they have like a 4 or 5 year array. It's not like they're having a horrific year, that sort of stuff is what I'm trying to get at. But there is literally no one. Like I'll read you some guys right now. The guys that pitched in the game today for El Paso, the starter went 2.2. Bushley went 2.2 innings. He's a starter, 5 earned runs, 5.85 ERA on the year. Quezada, 11.57 ERA on the year. West Powell, 7.03 ERA on the year. Markle, 4.07 ERA on the year. Bimal, 5.40 ERA on the year. The list just goes on and on. Camarena's down there with a 5.29. Miguel Diaz's ERA down there is an 8.64 in limited action. Reese Nair, 3.12 ERA. That's why you've seen him from time to time. Martinez, 6.28. McGrath, 8.06. Miller, 4.99. Nord, 4.89. Nick Ramirez, 5.23. Like there's the list literally keeps going. This is AAA, mind you. So then you go, okay, AA. I don't want to bore you guys too much with this. AA, you know, we've done that. Pedro Avila a couple of years ago, he came up and started against the Diamondbacks because he had a super good looking curveball. Mind you, he's down there right now. He has a 4.2 ERA, which isn't that bad. But then when you're looking across the board, Cosgrove, it has a 1.75 ERA in 25 and two-thirds innings. And I'd say Lugo and Kuzia, who I've literally never heard of before in my life. Like I said, I do a pretty good job keeping track of who's pitching and whatnot, would be kind of the only guys that you'd look at. But again, like you said, it's a stretch bringing them up from double A. And do you want to lean on those guys in these high leverage situations? Probably not. So you have to take a flyer with these two guys. So like you said, hopefully we can get a tune out of them, and hopefully they don't completely crap the bed.
Yeah, we'll see. Did you said Mackenzie Gore's AAA stats?
No. So his reset in the app, because he went back to Peoria after his little blister issue. Then he was in Fort Wayne. He just got promoted to AA San Antonio. He had a 5-inning appearance there with 3 earned runs. So not terrible. He's
currently got some AAA starts, yeah.
He does. He had about 7 or 8, if I'm not mistaken, and he was in the sixes ERA-wise. So,
yeah,
he just apparently is not quite there. They were, based off of the tonnage of press conferences and stuff this year, they were fully expecting him to be ready. And unfortunately, that's just that hasn't been the case. And that kind of sums up what has gone on in the last month, just in Mackenzie Gore with the pitching, not having guys like this entire first hour, pretty much. I know we're keeping it kind of long here, has been an exact reason as to what we're trying to wrap our heads around as to what's gone on. So to answer your question, you smell like winning at Padres Fangirl. Yeah, what the heck happened to the team? There you go. Rewind a minute one. You got an hour of us trying to figure out what the heck has gone on. Is there anything that you want to add to that question right now?
No, I think we hit that question pretty hard with that. I honestly, I think something happened at the trade deadline, and it's been downhill from there.
Yeah. No, it's tough to put the finger on one reason or thing or person or player, So yeah, I wish I knew. Keep the mailbag rolling since we're kind of rolling in there. I kind of want to get this wrapped up here decently soon, so we'll try to get through this pretty quick. At Garrett Grant 95, is this the Padres' biggest collapse in franchise history? What do you think?
In my lifetime, yeah, maybe.
From what you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it feels like it is because we started so strong.
Yeah.
The Pods started strong and they were playing that first series that they played against the Dodgers. They played them tough and they, you know, did well. And then now getting swept by the Dodgers, it's just, and where we are now. I mean, we've won two games in a row, so maybe we can keep the momentum going. Let's from roll. Here. But yeah, I don't know. It feels like it. I don't know if it is or not, but it definitely feels like it.
I think we have to wait until the season's done to answer that question. But like you said, yes, it does feel like that. The one other season that I can remember is in 2010 when we went on that 10 game skid and the Giants beat us in game 163, if I'm not mistaken. It might be in the Rockies, but I think it was the Giants that beat us in either. It was maybe even game 162. We could have won and we didn't or whatever, but we lost 10 straight games towards the tail end of the season. It was pretty similar to this. Like, that team was not as good as the squad that we have now or perceived to be as good. So that's the only other time that I could think of there being a similar type collapse. But yeah, I would agree with you. I think as of right now, this feels like the biggest collapse that we've seen in my lifetime. Like you said, we're same amount of Padre years. So being Padre fans. So yes, since 94,
yeah,
I would agree with you. I don't remember much from 94 to 98, unfortunately, but from 99 on pretty much. Yes, I would say that it probably is, but season's not over. It's not season's over. Like not over. Said, 2-game win streak. Let's keep it rolling.
1 game back. I feel like no one understands that. 1 game back of that second wild card spot.
I know. As horrible as it's been, we're right in it. So see the positivity. It's going to come out at times.
Yeah.
next question. Blake Snell's number one fan at Bet94. Bochy is manager for the Padres again. What's your thoughts on that, Matt?
Realistically, honestly, even if it was like prime Bochy, I don't think he would do well with Tatis. I don't think he would do well with this team. I think this is an emotional team that does best when they're having fun and when they're being themselves, you know, and when they are the face of baseball, they're winning games. I don't think that's kind of how – I don't think that's how Bochy runs his clubs. Yeah. It would be great, but it sounds like it would be a good idea, but honestly, I don't think it would be.
We were talking about Madison Bumgarner somehow before we started recording. If there is the epitome of a difference in a ball player between Madison Bumgarner and Fernando Tatis Jr., like find me a better example of a difference because
that kind of opposites
that sums up kind of who Bochy had on his squad and who Tingler's got. And I think that's why they liked Tingler a lot at the beginning. And he did a good job last year for the most part, because he was so forward thinking, very modern day manager, could manage, let the guys play and be who they were, and you're going to get the most out of them in that essence. I have a soft spot for Bochy just because growing up, like he was the manager that he was my first manager that I really remember, like the Padres actually like having because of my age. So I don't know. I probably wouldn't, just because if he's checked out and he's kind of like soft retired already, that tells me that he's not ready for a 3-4 year new tenure of that. He even had some health issues too when he was on the Giants, where he had to take some time off. So I would probably say no, although I do think that he would have handled the last few months much, much better than Tingler because of his experience. And we probably would be at least a couple games ahead in the wild card. That is very tough to put a number on. And I could have been completely wrong with that. And we might not have been in that position in the first place to have that record that Tingler had accumulated with them. So you could spin it a whole bunch of different ways, but I would probably agree with you and say no. He's happy managing the French team with his son there right now. So trying to get him to the World Baseball Classic. Next question, your boy Stizza at Babyface Stew. Do y'all think the Padres will end up making it into the wild card, or are we just watching the beginning to their collapse? Kind of a similar theme to this, to these questions. Also, if they do make the wild card, will they be healthy enough to actually make it far in the postseason? Good question, Babyface Stew. What you think, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, we're one game back of St. Louis in that second wild card spot. I don't think it's crazy to say that we could snag that spot. Obviously, we'd be playing either the Dodgers or the Giants on the road, which is not exactly the strength of this Padres team. But, you know, if we gather momentum and this team is having fun again and Tatis is at short and just is the spark plug that he is, most definitely they could win that game. It's one game. Anything can happen. And, yeah, I mean, with Snell, if Snell can get healthy again and do what he's been doing with Musgrove and then, you know, maybe Darvish, you'd really only need three or four starters in the playoffs. And those are pretty good. And I think, you know, Cronenworth back, the lineup's going to be looking pretty good as well. And hopefully they can start hitting. Then you got to look at your opponents. I mean, I'm not scared of the Dodgers at all. The Padres can play them tough. The Brewers are a team to watch out for. They've got a gnarly
rotation. Yeah, they're very good.
Rotation. Yeah, but I've been thinking this the entire season is the Padres have the pieces. You know, they have the talent. They just got to execute. And that's been the frustration.
Yeah, no, I mean, I completely agree with your answer on that one. I don't have much to add on that. I mean, do I think that will make the wild card? My gut right now tells me probably not, based on still how everything has gone in the last month. However, we're on a two-game winning streak. So my gut is telling me probably not. My heart is telling you're an idiot. Yes, of course they're going to make it. I do think that they are going to play better baseball, though, with that being said, in the next few weeks. It depends on how hot. The problem is, being a game back now, it's not in your hands as a team. Before, it was in their hands, because if they, you know, took care of business, they would take care of business and they can get in. Now you have to rely on not a collapse from the Cardinals, obviously, because you're a game back, but you have to beat them by a game or better the rest of the season. The Cardinals are on fire right now, so hopefully there's a little bit of an auto correction. The Reds have been stumbling, but they're still pretty close to us. I think they're a game back, two games back. So if they get hot again, no pun intended, then see, what I'm trying to say is that there's contention and it's not necessarily, you know, in your hands, like I'm trying to say, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Right. So
they're not in the driver's seat of
the
second spot.
Yeah.
You know, they're punching from down below, one game back. I feel like that's, you know, if they do start getting their momentum back and getting their emotion back and having fun again, that's where I feel like they thrive. You know, they played the Dodgers tough all season.
Yeah.
You know, except for this past month, because they were the underdog. And I think that's where they shine.
And I think to add on to that point, they love the big stage, to be honest with you. The early in the season, it feels like a bigger stage because it's fresh. Once you get to this point of the year, everyone's drained. So maybe they'll get a little kick in the ass with, you know, playoffs around the corner. Let's go. Like, let's play in some meaningful games. Who knows? I think they can do it. I really do. I my gut again is telling me they're just going to miss out, but I still think they can do it. Next question at LaurenBV89. How many home runs slash stolen braces? It's getting late. Slash stolen bases do you think Fernando ends the season with? He's currently on 39 home runs and I believe 25 stolen bases. This is as of, again, 2 days ago.
What do you think?
What do we got? A good 2 weeks left in the season. I think he's going to end up with 45 home runs and 28 stolen bases. That's what I'm thinking. I don't think he's going to get to the 30-30 season, unfortunately, specifically because ever since he hurt his shoulder, they have hardly ever had him steal any bases. I think at the All-Star break, I want to say he was around like 21, 23. Fast forward 2 months, he is 25. So unless they just say, you know what, you got all offseason to heal, buddy, go win us some baseball games, then he might hit that 30 mark. He's getting on base a lot now too, so that's going to obviously increase your chances. But I'm going to go 45-27. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I think he's not going to be stealing as many bases as he was early in the season. I think you hit the nail on the head there. They're just, I think himself and the team just doesn't want to risk him being out because he is the heart of the team. I think the Padres get hot. I think Tatis gets hot. And I think, you know, hitting 45 would be good. I think I'm going to take over. I take 46. I think 46 homers. Honestly, yeah, I don't think he's going to steal too many bases, maybe, you know, and finishes with 28.
I think you saying that the Padres are going to get hot has just flipped my gut. And I am going back to your question, babyface, dude. They're making the playoffs. They're making this wild card game. Screw the gut.
That's right.
They're making this team. They're making this this postseason. They got this. Come on, let's get hot, boys. We got Fernando. If you got Fernando on your team, anything's possible. That will make anything short possible. Again. Yeah, exactly. That there you go. to kind of go back against that positivity at Nolan Sanity. Why do we suck? Again, this question was written 2 days ago. I'm not sure if his opinion would change too much. This could be as long of an answer as you want, or, you know, we kind of explained it in the last hour and 15, but
yeah, I think honestly though, a real answer to that, I think this is on the shoulders of Tingler. I don't think, you know, if the Padres don't get hot and we miss playoffs, I think Tingler's gone. And I think he should be. Even if we make the playoffs, I don't know how I feel about Tingler in being the head coach of this team. I don't think – it just seems like he's kind of the puppet of Preller.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah. Yeah. He doesn't have a spine. He doesn't have any fire to him, which is – it's great seeing, you know, Schumacher – freaking just lay into umpires when Tingler won't. So there's not a lot of leadership coming from Tingler.
Yeah. And, you know, I've had just some discussions with, you know, random friends and people just in the last month. And I feel like when everything going well, Tingler does a good job of maintaining that just because he doesn't rock the boat that much. He's very even keeled, very consistent with his approach. His freaking press conferences are the same. It's deja vu. It's Groundhog Day every day. You know, we're trying to get hot. We're trying to click. We're going to do our best, you know, blah, blah, blah. He's just got the same answer, which, you know, by game 140, I'd probably have the same damn answer for you too. With that being said, flip side, when you're not doing well, I don't think he has the ability, as we've seen, to pull this squad out of a slump like some other managers definitely could. Is it all on him? No. But like we said before, he's the man in charge, you know? So if this team does well, he's going to get credit, probably too much credit. If they do bad, he's probably going to get too much credit for doing bad too. If they make the playoffs, I think he's definitely going to stick around for another season because that shows that he's growing as a manager too. I don't think that he's going to be gone specifically because of the relationship with Preller and Tingler and the fact that he's such a young manager, I think that they'd probably give him one more season. And with that being said, you got Bebo another 12 after that too. So I think that they can kind of roll the dice and be like, you know what, we'll keep Fernando for, you know, another 12 years. If it doesn't work out next year and they shuffle some things up in the offseason, then, you know, maybe we'll look at moving him on. So I don't think he'll be gone next year, even if they miss the playoffs. It wouldn't surprise me if he was gone. I just don't know if Preller's ready to do that, especially just given how, you know, young he is as a manager and stuff too. Yeah, that being said, I've definitely cooled on him as a manager. I was very excited last year. Obviously the team is doing good, but now wouldn't rub me the wrong way either way.
Yeah. To be honest with you. Yeah. I mean, the whole purpose, you know, of a manager just going off on an umpire and making a whole show about it, it's not because the manager's that pissed off that he needs to make himself the center of attention.
Yeah.
It's to light a fire under the butts of the players.
Exactly.
That's why. And Tingler doesn't do that. I don't know if it's just not his temperament, I guess.
I feel like sometimes he goes out there with that intention and then he just doesn't follow through with it. Like I even saw it today. Grisham was rounding second. He clearly got obstructed with, you know, the second baseman there, Flores, I think it was. And to be honest with you, like there's a legitimate case that he's scoring if he doesn't get into that quote unquote altercation. You know, it wasn't altercation, right. Lack of a better term. And he went out there looking pretty hot and then he cools down immediately. And it's like, if you're going to go out there for that, just go out there and prove your point, get your money's worth, fire your boys up. I think it's a little bit, I mean, it's never too late, but you want to kind of set that tone a little bit earlier in the season. And like you said, that's why I love Skip doing that too, because he understands. Like he was a player for a really long time. I'm sure he got fired up when his, you know, when Tony La Russa got his bell, you know, he got rung up, you know, being on the Cardinals and stuff. And so for that, I would love to see him follow through and just rip into an umpire. Like, why not? What do you have to lose other than a game check right now? Like, just go get your money's worth. And I completely agree. This team needs some fight and a fire. And I agree with you. He hasn't provided that recently. And it would help, in my opinion, if he did do so. It does go a long way. Like you said, it's not center of attention thing. It's literally to fire his boys up. And they need that. Mm-hmm. So can't rely on Fernando for everything.
Yeah. I mean, he's the spark plug. He can't do everything.
No. But all right. Last but not least, at Patrick Wallace 79, dude sounds familiar. If we had to play a wild card game tomorrow, who is in your lineup and batting order and who's pitching? This is a very good question, Patrick. Would you like to have the honor of doing that first?
Okay. Yeah, I'll go first. Provided Snell is healthy and we're playing the Dodgers, I go Snell on the bump. Mainly because Snell's been pitching fantastic, but also because the Dodgers have a lot of deadly lefties. So I think he can help neutralize those. And then batting order is going to depend. I think, you know, let's say it's the Dodgers, maybe Scherzer's on the mound.
Probably, I would think, yeah.
Let's just say he's pitching. I personally would like to see Frazier hit one, Tatis two, Machado three. And then from there you can go, at this point in time, Hosmer. I guess, well, if Cronenworth is healthy, we don't really know. But Cronenworth after Machado, then Hosmer, then Myers, and Grish.
Yeah. I like that. I think for me, yeah, so let's assume everyone's healthy, right? Crone is healthy. Fernando's healthy. That nothing happens the rest of the way to anyone. And then you know, Crone's healthy as well. And then yeah, I'm assuming you'd want Nola there too at the back end.
Yeah, then Nola, depending on, I guess, rest days and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. So for me, I would probably go Grisham one. Kind of surprising because he's ice cold right now.
Yep.
I'd go Grisham one. I would go Frazier two. I'd go Fernando three, Manny four. I would have Haas on the bench. I would probably have Crone five. And so then I would have Frazier second base, Crone first, Fernando short. And then six, I would go Will out in right field. Eight, I would go Nola because I'm skipping my seven right now. And if I want a lefty, do I want Pham? Or do I want, at this point, probably Profar is the two guys that I would think that could play that position. I would probably go Pham because of his experience. But with that being said, Pham and Profar are very interchangeable. So I'd have Pham hitting seventh. The reason why I want to put Profar in there is because he'd hit lefty. But I'll go Pham seventh. And I completely agree with you. Blake Snell has been lights out against Dodgers recently too. Even beginning of the year, last year, famously on the Rays. And so I would have Blake Snell on the bump and a very short leash. Would I have Musgrove coming in there as well? Because Musgrove, he's looked good against the Dodgers. He hasn't looked as good as Blake Snell has. If we're starting against the Giants, for example, let's assume that the Dodgers are winning the NL West. I want Musgrove in there instead of Blake 10 out of 10 times. And it's just the success that Blake has. Like you said, great point with the lefties in the Dodgers lineup. They have some fantastic lefties in there. So, yeah, we're assuming playing the Dodgers, definitely go that role. If it's Giants, I'd probably go Musgrove.
Agreed on Musgrove, too. He's earned that, I think. It's just a tough matchup with the Dodgers for him.
Yeah. And at this, again, this is assuming everyone is healthy. I would, if we made it, I would not be surprised at all to see Musgrove starting against the Dodgers for that matter in a one game wild card. Just because he really does deserve it, to be honest with you. He's been our most consistent guy. We beat that, you know, earlier in the episode. And so you can't argue with that. If they want to throw Musgrove out there, there's no arguing with that. The sad part is Darvish has fallen off so much. I don't even know if he gets in the game, to be honest with you. And that's crazy to me and a bummer. So hopefully he can finish the season strong. And we are playing the hopefully Dodgers in the wild card. Who would you prefer just to extend that? God, Dodgers are hot right now. We beat the Giants twice, so maybe the Giants. But
I think if you had to choose, I'd pick San Francisco, I think, to be honest. Yeah.
I kind of want to say the Dodgers just because we know that we can beat them in a very high leverage game. And then if you beat them, I think that we have a much better chance beating the Giants in a five-game series than the Dodgers. That's my thought process with that one. So we could probably sneak a game from the Dodgers and then probably have a better chance against the Giants in a five-game series. Not to say that that's an easy matchup because the Giants are very, very good, obviously. That's my thinking behind that. So,
yeah, I agreed on that. National League is no joke with the Giants, the Dodgers, the Brewers.
Braves
it's a tough road, but if the Pods get hot, watch out.
Yeah, no, we got the pieces, and who knows? Last but not least, before we sign off here tonight, we'd like to go through our shout outs at the end here. First one, Zach Downing at Captain_Downing. Appreciate the interactions. Twitter feed has been picking up again recently. We're going to get some episodes out to you guys a lot more frequently, like in the beginning of the season here. So appreciate the interaction there, Zach.
And next shout out is at Ryan Payne 32.
Thanks, Ryan. Solid name. Last one. Last but not least, we have at hand banan 10. Again, thank you for the interactions. Makes our Twitter feed much more fun than it can be. I know it's been a little negative here in the last month, and understandably so. But like Matt's been saying, let's keep the faith. Let's keep it rolling because we're still in this. We're a game out. Let's keep the positive vibes going. Root on our boys. And last but not least, thank you so much for coming on, Matt. Really appreciate it. It's been a lot of fun. We just do this anyways, not behind a camera and a microphone. So, yeah, just want to say thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. We're in the thick of it with the Padres right now. So stay positive, Twitter.
Stay positive. All right. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Podfathers. Hopefully Los comes on here again here shortly. Love you, Los. See you, Matt.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Podfathers, a Slam Diego Padres podcast, the People's Podcast. The Podfathers is produced by Los and Walls. Our show is executively produced by Jacob Lamb.
Our theme song is A Bubba by Trilock. To get in touch with the show, follow us on Twitter at Podfathers619 or email us at podfathers@gmail.com. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all other major audio platforms.
Go Pods!